Hey there. If you like this podcast, you are going to love my new book, Needy, How to Advocate for Your Needs and Reclaim Your Sovereignty. In Needy, I share my unique approach to identifying, honoring, and advocating for the most tender and true parts of yourself that are yearning to be acknowledged. It is an invitation to embody self-acceptance, which leads to meaningful growth in self-responsibility, self-care, self-trust, and self-love. All of the themes that we talk about all of the time on this podcast. Woven with threads of timeless wisdom, honest assessments of our needs, and heartfelt personal stories of transformation from yours truly and others, Needy illustrates a profound vision for what is possible when you listen to the stirrings of your heart and reclaim your undisputed sovereignty in your life. Now, you can get Needy wherever books are sold, but if you are a podcast super fan, you might appreciate the audiobook, which I do narrate, which you can find on Audible. Now, on to today's show. Hey there, it's your host, Mara Glatzel, and you are listening to the Needy Podcast. Here at Needy, we are devoted to sharing frank conversations and true stories about what it means to meet your needs consistently, messily, and sustainably. To get more information about today's episode, please visit theneedypodcast.com. Now, on to today's show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Needy. My name is Mara Glatzel. I'm your host, and I am here today with Nina Manelson. Nina is a body peace coach. She helps women end the war with food and body and finally feel truly at home in their body as it is. She brings her 30 years of experience as a therapist, body trust guide, and psychology of eating teacher to help women create a positive relationship with their food and body. Nina's work and body poems are all in service of helping women get off the diet roller coaster and into a compassionate, nourishing, and powerful way of eating, living, and walking through the world. Ah, so good. Welcome, Nina. I'm so glad that you're here.
So first of all, I am just thrilled and delighted because I feel like you and I could just get into the conversation about our needs and our unique needs and special needs and how our body speaks our needs for hours. So what I do is I help women end the war with their food and body and create body peace. And why I do it is really because I was at war with my food and body for decades. It was always the feeling of not enough, not doing it right, not eating it right, not being the right size, and always trying to manage my body to fit the ideal, right? The ideal that the culture was telling me, the ideal of the wellness industry and the yoga world and all the different ideals. And it was forever this battleground. My body was the battleground. And for me to say, no, I actually don't want to be living in a battleground. I want to be living in a place that feels good. I want to be living in a place that feels fun and nourishing and joyful and delightful and peaceful was kind of mind-blowing because it's not how I was raised. I was raised on this idea that our body was a project. And it was a DIY project. It wasn't even like a project that you ask for help with or do a community project. It was the do-it-yourself project. And you were supposed to intuit by all the diets that were out there, which do-it-yourself kit you were going to do, and then do that and then fix your body with your do-it-yourself diet kit. And then ta-da, at the end, there's your finished body project. Well, we all know that that's actually not how it rolls. And it just ends up making us feel like a failure and make us feel bad about ourselves. And so my work came out of that inner pain and turmoil and move me into the realm of becoming a therapist, of becoming a psychology of eating coach and teacher, becoming a body trust provider, seeping myself into intuitive eating, connected eating, somatic eating, you know, really coming from that place of our body and her or his or their needs has deep wisdom.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, I also was in that place of fixing, I mean, project and also for me, problem.
Yes.
Like, oh, your body is the problem.
Yes, with a capital T.
Yeah. And everything in your life would be better if your body was better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I came to this work with needs from that place of, as so many of my clients do, and I know so many listeners here do as well, of, you know, how do I only know what I'm supposed to do based on how I'm supposed to look. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what I actually need. Mm-hmm. You know, I only know like what I should need, what makes me more productive, what makes me thinner, what makes me, you know, better, or as even as I grew, like become a parent, like a more patient parent, those sorts of needs, but nothing that was genuine to me, because I was taught to just distrust my body.
Right. Well, the locus of control is outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. The goal is productivity. The goal is to be a good parent. All those things. The goal is to look a certain way. All of those things are external locus of control things, right? To be in touch with what is our body wisdom, what is our own need, is looking inward, is having an internal locus of control. But if inherent in the societal message is you are faulty and you need fixing, it diminishes the wisdom that is there, right? So how can you look inside when you're being told what's inside is a problem? Right? It messes with our mind because you're like, well, maybe I know. No, I can't know because the culture tells me that the answer is out there. So to shift our awareness, to shift our focus, to be one that deeply listens inside is countercultural. It moves away from the fixing paradigm, the dieting paradigm, the anti-aging paradigm. It moves us into a wisdom-based paradigm. And that makes us very, very powerful, which is often what the culture is trying us to get us to not be.
So Nina, mm-hmm. How do the million-dollar question, how do we do that?
So,
or rather, how have you done that?
How have I done that? That's great. I can walk into that through that path. So the way that I've done it is, first of all, slowly. And gradually, because this idea of my body is the problem is the first piece to unpack, right? And the body is the problem makes it something that then we can focus on. Here's the problem. Let me fix this, right? The problem with the problem is that the problem is my body is not only that the body becomes the problem, but our body becomes the storage container for all other problems in our life. Oh, see, I'm not having the relationship I want. My body must be the problem. I'm not having the career success I want. Oh, my body must be the problem, right? Oh, I'm having stress in my life. I better change everything I eat, right? We make our body and the food the problem. So one of the first places I started to unpack was, wait a second, I'm not the problem, which is fundamentally opening the door to self-compassion. And when we start doing that, opening the door to self-compassion, we start to open the door to, you know this one more than anyone, to our needs. What do I need? What would nourish me, right? And so I started feeling into that. What do I need? What would nourish me? And to start actually adding those things in. That's a very different paradigm than the subtraction paradigm of diet culture. It's very powerful to be in an additive mode. What do I need to add? What do I want to bring into my day, into my world, into my life, into my body, right? And when we're in addition, we're coming fundamentally from this place of deservability and receiving. And those are two biggies, right? To feel like we deserve it and that we're allowed to receive it.
Yeah. It's so, so huge because, you know, I think sometimes we even have so many components in our life that we already love and want and are able to say like, yes, this, more of this, but we may have it there and we're not even receiving it from ourselves or from, you know, other people or the world around us because we don't think at the core that we deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. And even it goes so far as I deserve to have a body. I deserve to get old, right? Those two statements, I know they sound so fundamental, but they really fly in the face of diet culture. The diet culture is saying you don't deserve to have a body. You only get this particularly prescribed body, right? You don't deserve to get old. You should be anti-aging, right? So to move towards these very fundamental pieces of this is my body and I get to nourish this body. And if I'm lucky, I get to age into this body.
Yeah. So what does it look like for you now? Now that you've added things in, and of course these, you know, it shifts with time and circumstance and age and, you know, all of that. What does it look like for you to meet your needs on a regular day?
So it started for me where I was like, you know, I had little kids and I was like, just once a month, just one time a month, I'm going to do something that really like nourishes me. Right? I'm going to do something that's just for me. So I started by going to get foot massages once a month. Then once I had that in my schedule, I was like, yeah, that's not enough. I want more, you know? And I was also battling this whole part of like, I can't spend money on myself, right? Like if I'm going to spend $50 on a foot massage, well, that's like a whole ballet lesson, you know, like what about the kids, right? Which is what goes through our mind, you know, when we're raising young people is like, let me just sacrifice everything about myself for them. But fundamentally, the more I found that I cared for myself, the more I had space, time, emotional availability to be more of who I wanted to be as a mother, as a coach, as a partner, right? It actually widened my bandwidth for life. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to add something twice a month. We're going to go for twice a month. So then I started adding floats, right? So floats are isolation tanks that you just immerse in water. And I was lucky enough that I have a float place close to me. And I'm still waiting, Mara, for you to be able to come up and visit and we'll go for a float date. But it's basically a like intense nervous system recalibration, right? So I would go and float once a month. And I was like, oh, that's good. And I was like, then what else? What else could I add in, right? And then, you know, and I, this is, you know, pre-COVID, I belong to a gym. And then I started to change the way I worked out. And Friday afternoon was not a workout time, but it was like, it was under the guise of a workout time. I would go with a girlfriend. We would get on treadmills. We would chit chat for an hour. It was like our emotional weekly download. And then we would sauna and steam and just put masks on our face and sit at the gym. And all the ladies who are rushing in and out for their workout would look at us and go, it looks like you're at a spa. And I would say, we are. We are. This is our Friday afternoon spa. So then I was like, okay, now I got something weekly. Then I've got two things, you know, twice a month. I was like, what else? And I know it sounds like I'm this high maintenance gal, and I am. And I want to say the more we can embrace the high maintenance part of us, the needy bit of us, the more space I have for everything. To be there for more people, to support more clients, because I feel filled up. And this is how it relates to food and body. The more I am nourished in all these other ways, the clearer I am about what food nourishes me and what doesn't. And the more that I am truly at peace with my body. So the third thing I added in was community acupuncture. Because what I'm most interested in when I add things in are things that shift my nervous system. It's a piece of nourishment that I know you talk about. I just think as a culture, we need to talk more about. We talk about nourishing our body. We talk about, exercise for our physical health, nourishing our nervous system, helping our nervous system dial it down is supportive for every single system of our brain, our mind, our soul, our spirit, our body, everything. So when I put something into my life, I'm like, how is this going to impact my nervous system? Acupuncture, again, big nervous system dial down. And then in the summer, and I can't wait for this to happen again, I swim. That is my, like, me and water is a happy thing.
And not just in the summer, in the off seasons as well, maybe not in the dead of winter.
Not in the dead of winter. No, this past year I got a wetsuit. That was a big adventure. And so I was doing cold water swimming. And again, right? It's that rush like of euphoria that totally shifts my nervous system, right? That cold water, like I am alive and my whole nervous system goes, I am waiting every day for that moment. I'm looking for those moments. When I talk to women about what they want to eat, where does that come from? That moment of, and is the only place they're getting it in chocolate chip cookies. There's nothing wrong with chocolate chip cookies, but if chocolate chip cookies are the only place that your nervous system is getting that sigh of relief, we should be talking about that because we all deserve more than chocolate chip cookies to adjust our nervous system.
It's so interesting because something that I've been working with this year is like finally, after so much, figuring out my relationship with moving my body because it was so hijacked by diet culture and being in the gym at such an early age. And then, there was a long period of time where I couldn't move my body at all because I couldn't figure out how to do it without being abusive to myself. And this year with the pandemic, I realized like, oh, I'm like this for my nervous system. This is how I empty the cup of everything that I'm carrying. And, the problem was I really like super intense, vigorous exercise that's really sweaty and really dynamic. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't like that exercise anymore because I only like that because it like torched calories or whatever I was told. But then when I started to understand the nervous system piece, I was like, oh, I like to move like that because that, like, I am holding so much all the time. Like, that's what helps me just let it all go and really empty that cup.
It's like a sponge, right? When you wring out a sponge, that kind of physical movement that engages everything, that flushes out our system, that really just releases that real wring out is so powerful. But to do that, not from a place of how many calories am I burning? And it's such an important question is like, is this joyful? Is a really simple question to ask. Am I thinking about how many calories or am I actually having pleasure in this moment of movement? Or does it feel like I'm punishing myself?
Well, and I think going back to, a lot of what you're saying about rebuilding that trust with our bodies too, like it took, I mean, I'm talking like 7, 8 years of time where I built up my ability to be in conversation with my body so that I could again revisit like the site of of a lot of abuse and say, what actually is going on here and realize that.
I really want to like yellow highlighter what you just said. It takes time. This work requires patience. This isn't diet culture quick fix, right? It's not a DIY kit that you can assemble in 2 weeks and then you're done, right? Like I tend to work with women, 40 and above, and these are women we have spent decades training our body into management systems. So it's not going to take 2 weeks to unhook from it. And I love how you like it takes time to make this a place that's safe to start unpacking. What happened here? Where was I damaged by diet culture? How did diet culture interrupt my relationship with my own body? How did everybody telling me what I should eat, when I should eat, how long I should not eat for, keep me from going, hey, body, how are you doing? Are you hungry? What do you need? Right? It's as though I often liken diet culture to inviting someone else into our bed when we have a partner who we really like. And we're trying to have a relationship with that partner. We're trying to lay our head on the pillow and go, hey, honey, how was your day? How are you feeling? You know, what's up for you tomorrow? And meanwhile, diet culture's in there and going, I don't care how you feel. This is what's up for you tomorrow. You have this and this and this on your to-do list, and you have this and this and two. So do not be listening to one another. There is no intimacy here. Our relationship with our body is an incredibly intimate relationship that deserves to be fostered, supported. And diet culture comes in and is just like with a giant megaphone and interrupts. I'm like, butt out.
Nina, so something that I just so cherish about knowing you is the like luxury and extra specialness. And like, you're really great at, in my mind, what I call this in my life is laying it on thick. And I love, like, that is a high value for me too. Again, because I think it's like we let ourselves have, you know, okay, maybe like the bare minimum. Like, I can receive this much. And I see you going like this much beyond that. And which is just such a great role model, I think, you know, for me and for your clients, the people who get to be around you. And I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about that piece. Like, have you always been like that? Or is that something that you cultivated? How can we get a taste of that?
The way I think about that is it's about deluxe, the deluxeness of life. And I was not always that way, but I would have moments of it. So I spent 10 years living in New York, and my mom would come and visit. I was living in a crappy apartment in the village and, you know, like really not a great setup. And my mom would come visit, and she would take me what I called the princess tour. We would move up to her hotel uptown. We would go to the theater and we would shop at Bloomingdale's. And I had this whole other life for 3 days when she came and visited. I called it the princess tour. And it was like every time she would come, I'd be like, I want that. I want more of that quality of. Like you're allowed to experience theater, connect with things that are delicious and yummy, and eat Dove bars and taxis. I never got in a taxi. Like there was no taxiing in my college, you know, 10 years of New York City life. You walked or you took the bus, right? So I was like, oh, I want more deluxe. And to me, the doorway into deluxe is sensuality, right? And you can have deluxe. You don't have to be like in a taxi in New York City, eating a Dove bar, you know, going to Broadway. It doesn't have to be that. It can be, I am sitting at my kitchen table and I have this one exquisite bite of, you know, egg and toast with a little avocado on top and a little sriracha sauce. And that is going to be my one orgasmic bite, right? We can have deluxe and yum and over the top. Just deliciousness in every moment, right? The way I get dressed in the morning. I'm like, how do I want to feel? I want to feel deluxe. Like this winter, I was like, I need more velvet. I researched velvet wrap dresses. I spent way too long looking. I am now wearing a velvet wrap dress, right? I was like, this is what's going to make me feel sensual. So for me, the avenue in there is our senses. And the more we can be listening to our senses, our sensuality, it is actually a fast track to what nourishes our body, what feels good, what makes us feel. And that pleasure, just to come back to the nervous system thing, that pleasure is a fast track to shifting our body from that sympathetic nervous system activation, that fight or flight, to parasympathetic, that rest and digest, what I call like piña colada on the beach experience. right? So the more we can be in that, like, deluxe, yum, delicious orgasm, like, oh, so good, the more we're actually tending to our nervous system. And again, the more we are tending to our nervous system, for me, then life is doable, more than doable. I'm available for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, that I'm available for it piece, I think is so huge because, particularly, Nina, you and I have gotten to know one another in a pandemic context. And, I wish everybody could see you right now because you are like, look gorgeous and are always like, look like, not just like gorgeous, but like, you look like you feel so good in what you're wearing and also in your surroundings. And, I think that this is a time when even people who may have done some things like that before are having a really hard time getting creative and keeping that in their lives or bringing that into their lives in a pandemic context. And I think about, how you would talk about having like dinner parties and these transformative, immersive experiences in your home, which is, such a inspiration for me. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, because I think particularly when we're stuck in our homes, I hear a lot of, I can't have that now. Like, I can't have that till I don't know what, 2022, or, some other time other than that, or never again. I don't know. But how can we get creative with meeting our needs and bringing that deluxeness into our lives now?
I think that's such a great question. And in the beginning, I definitely had that nervous system, it's fight, flight, freeze, flop, and fawn. I went into flop. I was like, ugh, I just got so sad, right? And a little bit immobile there for a bit, and into frozen and flopping. And then my kids started to have birthdays. And I was like, I could see their sadness as well. And the desire to create celebration within our home actually made me creative. And I was like, okay, we can't go out, we can't invite people in, but let's create the most fabulous restaurant in our own dining room. So everybody's birthday, we've done them all, right? It's been a long time, we've done them all. So for my son's birthday, we just moved all the furniture out of the living room, put a coffee table, put cushions down, ordered sushi, and had like a Japanese experience on the floor. For my daughters, we like hung up these colorful sheets in the dining room off the light fixture and created this tent and this sort of Casbah-like dinner. And we all chose a dish. And it was her 18th birthday, and she was sad. It was in the beginning of the pandemic. And she came downstairs. She did not want to come downstairs. And she was trying to sleep through her whole birthday. And I said, just come down for a minute. And she turned the corner, looked at the table, and she was like, this is really special, right? Everybody had championed this moment to make it deluxe. So it does sometimes take more energy. And I did not do it alone. Just saying. I did not go superhuman, super mom on these. I looked at the other people in the household and said, how can you help? What do you want to do here? Just to be really clear, in case anybody's putting me in the supermom category, you can just take me right off that pedestal immediately. This is not a solo sport. And for myself, in the pandemic, I was like, and still, there'll be nights we're all doing stuff and everybody's trying to get their work done and do dishes. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to close my door and I'm just going to have quiet. I just need a half an hour, just all by myself, quiet. And to just speak my needs, this is what I need. I've also found just like I'm not swimming as much, right? Because I'm not going to pools and it's winter, so I'm not in the lakes. I've been taking baths. I take nice deep baths with 2 full cups of Epsom salts, a tablespoon of coconut oil, whatever essential oil I want, and I soak. And I just let myself be in that Epsom salts. Yum, because Epsom salts has magnesium and magnesium helps our muscles in our body release. So again, it's that moment release in my body, nervous system release. But it takes like intentionality. I don't think it takes a lot more work. It takes that intentionality of, wait, I'm important here. what would nourish me right now? And how can I get support in making that happen? Notice that part. How can I get support in making that happen? This is not a solo sport. We can't do this like, I'm just going to make it happen. I'm going to make it happen for my family, and I'm going to make it happen for myself, and I'm going to support everybody else and my parents and my work. It's one of my pet peeves around women, is like around the productivity thing. How can we be more productive? I'm like, no, it's the wrong question. The right question is, where do we get more support? Now you're getting me really into it. Like, this is where I'm just like, no, 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 wrong questions. It's not more systems. It's not another freaking diet. How do we get more support? Because we all work way too hard, and we all deserve to be buoyed up.
Yeah. Well, and it's amazing, because I think that a lot of times too, we see that support as that's for somebody who has more, yeah, like luxury, more cash
yes.
in the bank, different kind of job, all of that. And, you know, a lot of what you're describing is bringing that intentionality to whatever the circumstances that we have right now. And, you know, something that I know personally from meeting that need for celebration is how generative it is. And, you know, as you said, it does take energy to be intentional in that way. And so sometimes we think, you know, ugh, you know, it takes too much energy, I don't have it, but we forget how much it gives back to us.
Yeah.
And yeah, how powerful that is, whether it's getting dressed in something that we actually want to wear, or I don't know, getting flowers. I took a cue from you and I got some beautiful flowers delivered this week. It's my birthday
Yay.
Soon. And I was like, you know, I did a good job the month of February, so I'm just going to get these amazing flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole family was here when they arrived, and they were all like, what's the occasion?
Like, you're like, me.
Me.
I am the occasion.
Well, and that so many people I talked to were like, you're allowed to just give yourself flowers? And the answer is yes.
100% yes. And this can start to sound like a really privileged conversation. And in some ways, 100%. Like, do I have lots of privileges? Yes. And this is something that's accessible. Support doesn't have to look like, I don't know, someone cleaning your house or nannies or, you know, a huge bank account. It can be connecting with friends and supporting each other. Right? It can be listening to podcasts that remind you, yes, you are worthy of time and attention and deluxeness and feeling truly at peace in your own body. Like, all of those ways to support you are doorways for you to go, oh yeah, right. Remind me to like come back home.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I think sometimes we can get accustomed to like, okay, I can let myself have maybe this much. And then the circumstances of our lives change, or the, you know, whatever might be impacting our nervous system might increase or decrease, or, you know, or we're aging and our needs change as we age. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to that, because I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, with aging, it's like the diet industry meets toxic productivity culture meets. It's like all of these things come together, and where we may have allowed ourselves like this little bit of room before, now it just feels like we need way more than we can possibly have or permit ourselves.
Yeah. So there's one very powerful thing I want to say as we enter the aging conversation, which is women, as they age, are made invisible. So if you're invisible, right, you have no needs in our culture. And so if you have no needs, you're not going to be supported. And so our culture turns aging into anti-aging. That's your only need if you're getting old, is to anti-age, which is actually not true. First of all, if you're lucky, you're aging. There is no such thing as anti-aging. It is, I think I read something that's $85 billion industry is aging. And in the same way that diet culture gets in the bed and ruins the intimacy that we have in our relationship, the anti-aging business gets in bed with us and actually interrupts our own wisdom. So as we're aging, we're actually aging into deeper wisdom. We're aging into a deeper knowing of ourselves. We're aging into a place of being able to speak up about what we see in the world and make a big impact. And the anti-aging movement is saying, no, you're not valuable over there. So it's so important for us to say, wait a second. First of all, I'm visible. I have needs, and what I have to say is really important. And the anti-aging, when you combine that anti-aging toxic messaging with diet culture, there's no way, there's no win, right? My body wasn't okay to begin with, right? Because diet culture is telling me I should be thinner, taller, blonder. At least those were my messages, right, growing up. And then the anti-aging movement is saying, no, your hair should not be gray, and you should not be having wrinkles, and you should not have any aches and pains, and you should definitely not get ill, because then you're not doing it right. So again, a natural process of being in a body and being on a planet for a long time becomes managed and regulated. And in that, we end up being controlled and have less agency and less enjoyment of life. And again, that idea of being truly available for life and experiencing it, we're diminished. So when it comes to hearing those messages around anti-aging, it's really important to be able to, the first thing I always say is put a sticker on it, label it. Oh, that's somebody telling me I shouldn't have wrinkles. Oh, that's somebody telling me that my skin should look dewy 16-year-old again. Oh, that's somebody telling me my tummy, even though I may have had babies or surgery or injuries, my belly should look like a 20-year-old soccer player. Oh, there's the anti-aging industry. The same way we want to name that diet culture, we want to name that anti-aging industry, because basically we're saying, get your paws off of my body.
Yeah. Well, and disrupting, again, it's as you so aptly put, another huge market. And, who's benefiting off of our bad feelings as they relate to those stories are the people who are selling us the fixes.
They are making money off of our shame.
Yeah.
Diet culture and anti-aging have a huge benefit in us feeling shame, because then they can make money off of our feeling bad about our bodies. It is part of our journey to say, no, my body, I get to define this relationship. You don't. Get out of my bed.
So, Nina, I'm wondering if there are times where doing that is more challenging and how you bolster yourself or how you find your way back to that strength. Because I imagine that there's a lot of people who are listening who have varying degrees of success with maybe on a good day being able to say, like, hey, yeah, no, like, I don't agree with that. But then on those bad days, how do you find your way back?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, I want to say I have those bad days, the days where you're like, oh gosh, like just like, no, it's just not happening for me. We all do, right? And that is why we need community. The longer I work with women, the more that I create opportunities for women to be in community, because we support each other. And I've seen you do the same thing. When we're in community, we can hold that idea of being in an intimate relationship with ourselves for one another. We can reflect each other's wisdom when we can't see our own. We can remind each other that there is absolute truth in what our body is speaking when we're like, no, my body is just a disaster right now, and I should really fix it. Someone else holds that truth that we are our best teachers and that we deserve to be heard and listened to. And we can't hold that all by ourselves. Again, it's that idea like, oh, this is a solo sport. This is your fix-it kit. It's not. It's communal living. It's championing each other. It's supporting each other in our vulnerability, in our moments where we're like, oh, this is rough. And sometimes the best we can do for ourselves, and I have done it plenty, is just gone, this is hard. this is hard, right? And that opens the door for self-compassion. Right now, I'm suffering. It's my unique kind of suffering. It may not be, you know, children in Africa starving, suffering, but right now I am having a hard moment. And to be in the vulnerability of that allows us to open the door of self-compassion and hopefully opens us up to a community that can say, I see you having a hard time. And I see all of you. This is not all of you. I see all of you. I see the wisdom within you. I see the brilliance of you. I see the many hats that you're wearing, right? I see the pandemic you're living through. I see all of you. And yes, you're allowed to be having a hard time. And what kind of support do you need right now?
So good. And yes, co-signed 1000%. Really important to be even having these conversations out loud because it brings so much oxygen in and so much light into these places where so much shame lives.
So much shame. I saw something about, like, I don't know who was it, like Mozart, I don't know what composer it was exactly, but some composer, you know, composed this entire library of music during the pandemic. And it said, boy, don't I feel like a slacker. And I was like, oh, how to add shame to everybody just surviving. Like, no, you do not have to be creating an opus right now. And to be a conversation that counters the constant drive of expectation that we were raised with, that our culture tells us every day, that our body is being exposed to. Like, no, let's have that gentler conversation that allows us to be in a deep listening with ourselves.
Oh, Nina, I could talk to you forever, but I know that we're coming to the end of our conversation. And I just want to know, for somebody who's listening to this and thinking, like, I want some of that Nina is having, what's one place to start in building this trust and getting back into our bodies and honoring our needs?
Yeah. One powerful place is I have an ebook that's available on my website, How to Be a Woman at Peace in Your Body. It's very powerful. It's short. It's one step into a different conversation with your body.
Awesome. Thank you. And I will link to your website, of course, in the show notes. Where else can people hang out with you online?
So I have a wonderful community of women, the Nourished Woman Nation, which is on Facebook, and it's a free community. And I also have an extraordinary group of women who are working with me in the Body Peace Seekers, which is that community of women who are just supporting each other in walking on the body peace path every day. Just one more step in relationship, in honoring, in peace with their body.
Wonderful. Thank you. I will link to all of that. Thanks, Nina.
Thank you, Mara. Such a delight.
Thanks for listening to the Needy Podcast with Mara Glatzel. If you'd like my support in learning how to nourish your needs, dance on over to theneedypodcast.com. to sign yourself up for Revive, a gorgeously free 5-day course chock full of real self-care and daily tending. If you love today's episode, pretty please leave us a review on iTunes and join us next week. And as always, permission loves company. So if there's a human in your life that you think can benefit from this conversation, I would be so grateful if you shared it with them. Thank you.